Hello and welcome to Radio Edu Talk. This is David Noble, as ever on Dalgety Bay, and I'm delighted to welcome to the show today Gillian Campbell-Thau, who's a modern languages expert, and we're going to be talking about everything to do with languages in the classroom over the next 20 minutes or so. Welcome to Edu Talk, Gillian.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you very much. I'm very flattered to use the word expert. I don't think that's ever been used in the same sentence as my name, David, but it was very gracious of you. I don't know who told you lies.
Well, it's on the basis of several recommendations on Twitter. As listeners will know, that every year we put a wee call out to ask listeners who they would like to hear on the show, and certainly you
Oh.
popped up a few times.
I think it's more for the comedy value, but I'll do my best to behave.
So tell us a little bit about your background in education, Gillian.
So I work for a local authority and I'm now a quality improvement officer, and part of my strategic remit is modern languages. I have been teaching for, well, I've been involved in education and teaching. I still class myself as a teacher for about 20 years. I've taught in Dundee and mainly in Glasgow, with a wee sabbatical to China to do VSO for a year. I absolutely love it. Everything to do with modern languages. I suppose in a way I could sum it up quite easily by I was recently speaking to a group of first years in a school, and the teacher said, you know, we're just looking for that chat. I said, oh, I know what chat you're looking for. Scheme Girl learns languages, does no bad. So, you know, for me, I've got a real passion about modern languages and everything to do with it. My day job involves is everything to do with languages and all the languages that we teach and that we use, and making sure that that's done properly, you know, that we're adhering to policy and that we're making the job for teachers, you know, as accessible and as possible as we can, because I think that's one of the big things, is that people they can be quite frightened when it comes to another language, you know.
And over the duration of this show, Gillian, I'm sure there'll be something for language experts and also for people teaching other subjects in primary or secondary. But can you just maybe set the ground for us by sort of arguing as to why languages and language learning is still important in primary and secondary?
Do you know, David, I spend every day talking about this and why it's important. I think it's ridiculous that we're still asking, you know, why is it important? I think particularly now, languages, dare I mention the Brexit word, you know, even before Brexit, languages, it's a real leveller. It really is. It's a real leveller for children, and it's not about attaining fluency. It's about intercultural understanding. It's about knowing why people do things, accepting them. You know, that kind of notion of global citizenship, where we understand about different people. And at the end of the day, I think you can always sum it up. Whenever I speak to young children, say, "Oh, why do you think it's a great idea to learn another language?" And they all just say, "To make a pal, to make a friend." And I think for a long time, languages suffered from such a poor image that you were only deemed to be a good language learner if you could remember loads and loads and loads of words. I mean, how many of us have got all this random vocabulary, you know, stuck in our heads, and yet it might not be things we would ever use? And I think one of the things maybe is we need to equip our children and our students and learners everywhere to be able to have that conversation, to be able to talk to people and to reach out to them. And learning a language allows you, you know, to. It's not just about the words, you know, it's about the culture, it's about the heritage, it's about the I think for me that tolerance and really getting to know it. And very often in my career, teachers of other subjects, so what's the point in kids learning that here? You know, and particularly if we're looking at the kind of attainment agenda, particularly looking at poverty, and people say, oh, but, you know, it's more important that kids learn this, it's more important that they learn that. Modern languages is one of the eight core curriculum areas, and it deserves to have that time. Every child can communicate in one way or another, and that might not always be verbally, as you well know. You know, that's why we're able to use Makaton, BSL. We need to get out of that idea of the, you know, there's no hierarchy of languages. So for me, I think, you know, in order, and it's not just about being able to compete in a workplace, it's about giving our children the best possible tools that they can go forward into the world with. It's not about them going abroad, it's about them staying here. I work in one of the biggest local authorities, I think, as most people may know, and we have over 100 languages in our schools, and that's something to be celebrated. But that means we need to know about those languages, and we need to know how to be able to communicate and understand. I could bang on about it all day, David, but I know I've only got 20 minutes, so.
I would imagine it's the case, though, that, you know, due to technology and cultural changes, and maybe even the volume of the number of different languages that are now spoken in Scotland, that the nature or approaches to language learning will be changing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think particularly when there's a huge focus on English literacy for children in school or Gaelic medium, for example, the Gaelic, obviously, we really have to look at how we teach and learn their languages. And we need to give children that acquisition time as well to let them hear it. I think very often, you know, in the past, when we had MLPS, MLPS was great in the day because it was brand new. MLPS was the modern languages in the primary school programme. And children ended up with lots and lots of, you know, information and lots of words and things that they could use. But the way that our children learn, it was very different. The way that children learn is very different than when I was at school. So we have to kind of move with that. And the importance is to allow children, we think about the process, how they learn their mother tongue. You know, children spend a lot of time listening before they even start to talk. So going in and jumping about with flashcards and showing children, you know, words before they've had any chance to kind of listen to language and assimilate it and learn it isn't the way we do it now. And that's okay. But that's about pedagogy. And that can be hard. It can be hard for people to accept that when they've always taught in a certain way. And also, you know, when we're working with languages, for example, that don't have the equivalent of English alphabet, you know, if we're working with languages, they've got scripts and things, we can't just go straight for that. Well, you can learn it by, you know, by writing it down. And my daddy is, my daddy's 70 and he's got the most amazing French. He can write it down beautifully. He can read it. But when he speaks it, I just have a wee laugh. Because I said, Dad, you just don't say that. Because the way that he was taught was all through reading and writing, whereas the way that I was taught was a wee bit different. And the way that I would teach it now would be far different. You know, children need to have that oral exposure and that oracy. Technology plays a huge role in it, David. I mean, it used to be you had to wait for weeks to get the paper sent to you or when the videos come in because somebody had sent a video over. I don't even think my daughter knows what a video is. You know, she's nine. And now we've got that instant connection with technology. And there's so many different ways that you can use it. But I don't think that technology will ever take the place of having that one-to-one conversation and that real person. And it's about not having an over-gamification of languages. We still have to work at it.
And what about in terms of the Gaelic language then? I'm just wondering, like you mentioned there about technology, we had some technology experts on from the Western Isles Council last year.
Oh,
Eastcol, yeah, and they were talking about how technology was enabling, it was one way in which Gaelic language learning was spreading into maybe non-traditional parts of Scotland. So can you just say a bit about the general state of play with Gaelic language learning?
Yeah, and well, that's one of the parts of my remit, and we can see that there's a real increase in the amount of people that are learning Gaelic, and the amount of people who are choosing to send their children to Gaelic medium, for example. The whole idea, you know, with eSchool is great because they're able to source, you know, teachers to teach through the medium of Gaelic. The biggest challenge to the Gaelic language in schools is staffing. You know, it's not easy. Well, it's not even just to Gaelic medium. I mean, I think that's in all education. We're always hearing about how short of teachers and things that we are. But by using technology, just to hook people up and where they can access Gaelic language teaching is great. I think very often when we talk about technology, we're always thinking it should be apps and websites and whatever else. But it can be literally as basic as being able to, you know, use whether you're using Glow or you're using other systems whereby you can actually get a physical speaker right into the room, you know, just as simple, you know, as what we're doing just now. And I love the way that eSchool works because they can have teachers, you know, that could be sitting on another side of the world that are then able to teach a class, you know, sitting not only in the islands but obviously in the mainland as well. So more and more what we're seeing is schools that are able to tap into that service and they're able to use that because we need it. You know, so it's a very, very easy way, but it's one of the ways that's really helping to engage more people with Gaelic learning, which is fantastic.
And just thinking back to my own O grade in German back in the day, you know, the thing that we really looked forward to and helped to keep us motivated and to practice our new language was to go on a residential trip to, in that case it was Germany itself. So can you tell us about how, you know, typically in Scottish schools and authorities were enhancing people's language learning? And maybe say something, I know that we've had guests on before talking about Erasmus and how that might change with Brexit. You know, what's out there for people that we might not know about?
There's lots of different things. I mean, I think, you know, the starter is always the school trip, whereby it might not necessarily be going with the languages department. There's lots of different examples of interdisciplinary learning, and certainly I know myself, I was involved in trips several times to the battlefields in Belgium and France with the history department. I don't think that it's just that, you know, it's not just to the exclusive right of a modern languages department, you know, to take trips. But it's really important that children see that they can use the language. And I think I've got a couple of examples, David. I think one of the ones particularly that's one of those wee golden moments in teaching. I used to work with an autism unit, and we were doing a whole project around about children learning French. And I was lucky enough to be part of a group of teachers who took the whole unit. Now, we're maybe only talking about 18 or 19 children, but we took them to Paris for the day, when you used to be able to get flights out of Prestwick for a penny or something. And we went out to Paris for the day, and the children were great. They were really well prepared. We knew what we were doing. But one of the golden moments, this wee boy went and he asked for an ice cream, and he came back and he just said to me, "She understood me." And that was one of those light bulb moments, and yet secretly went, "Yeah, dancer," because he'd just had this experience. He'd never been outside of, you know, his home city. And then the next thing, you know, he was having that. I also remember taking away a group of children who were doing advanced higher a long time ago now, just before their final orals. And we had them doing lots of different activities in Spain. And they were out doing surveys, and they had, you know, doing work experience things and coming back and then doing their final oral exams. And, you know, there's about four or five of that class that are now Spanish teachers. And that impact, that real life impact. But by far, I think I have to tell you about three very, very special individuals that I worked with in my last post when I was principal teacher. And this was in a school in an area of very, very high social deprivation. And when I first met these three young people, it's really shy, and they quite liked French, but, you know, they're now just about to go their year abroad, David. They've all gone on to university to study French. And one of the things they were able to do was to go to the European Parliament with the Euroscholar project and have the chance to actually speak in the Parliament. Two of them are very, very involved in local politics now. And I don't think we can ever underestimate that value of being able to go to that other country to practice. You know, we still have that real joy and excitement when children meet a person, you know, that speaks another language for the first time, you know, and quite, "Are you really French? Are you really Spanish?" You know, but then when you take them there and they can be understood. I know that from my own daughter. And I think, you know, we have to be creative in education as to how to do it. The biggest barrier, of course, is money. But money should never be a barrier to children having, you know, this educational experience. And sometimes you've got to beg, borrow, and I wouldn't say steal, but beg, borrow, and borrow a bit more from your pals and everybody else who you can get it from. Tapping into, obviously, European funding, we're trying to make as much of that as we possibly can. How that'll pan out, David, I really don't know. School exchanges, of course, are great, because when they meet their peers, and there's lots of examples of schools who've done that. So I think that's really important, but not even just for pupils. I think for staff as well, and being involved in professional exchanges. And there are a few organisations that help to do that. And that's really important. It's really important for staff to keep up their confidence as well, because sometimes your language can kind of fall a bit. I mean, your confidence levels fall. But I think that golden moment of "she understood me," for me, I think that sums it all up.
What about social media then? We speak often on EduTalk about how, and this has been for many years now, the real power of Twitter in particular, as well as other social media tools for teachers to network, to get that kind of professional dialogue, hashtag chats and things like that. So how has that impacted on yourself, and how do you use it with colleagues without turning them off, because I know there's always a danger of that as well. And then also how are learners using social media to learn language?
I must admit, I wouldn't say that I know a lot about social media, believe it or not. Very fond of a tweet, as you may have gathered. I don't use Facebook. I don't even know how to use half it, let's be honest. But I think for me, I think we're going to blame Joe Dale. You and I both know Big Joe, our pal. Yeah. And I kind of got involved in Twitter through that. And for me, straight away, it was a way of learning for me. More, I think, in a professional learning sense of pedagogy and what was happening in other classrooms. And it was instant CPD. It was just like, that looks quite good. I think I'll try that, you know, and having a look at different things like that. And I started getting involved in that. When I was head of department, I set up a departmental Twitter account years and years ago, more so we could showcase the children's work, you know, obviously with all the kind of the child protection issues around about that. But, you know, looking at their work and reminding them when there was homework or whatever else. And it kind of snowballed from there. When I was in school, they picked up our account in the Guardian. Apparently it was an example of good practice. But the Waynes would come in and say, see, you were on Twitter late last night, miss, you know. But it was a way of engaging with them. And then we would encourage children to use it. We'd say, well, you know, if you follow, you know, like, say, a football team in English, see if you can see if they've got it in another language. And it's more of that, you know, and that really immediate language learning, because it keeps you really, really up to date. I mean, you know, all the kind of things that I follow, it's mainly educators. Obviously, I stalk a few celebrities like everybody else, but it's mainly educators. And then it will be different things in, you know, like French newspapers, Spanish newspapers, kind of sites, you know, like the UN in various languages, different things like that, because it's immediate language. And it's such a great way for people to keep their language current and up to date. But it's an amazing platform for sharing ideas and kind of and meeting people. And I remember introducing Joe Dale at a conference, and I said, oh, hi everybody, here's my pal Joe, we met on the internet, you know, it sounds dead dodgy, but it was through Twitter. And the amount of people that, you know, when you go to a conference or you go to some CPD and you go, oh hello, hiya, I follow you on Twitter, I'm so and so, and that's become quite normal. I mean, 5 or 6 years ago, David, you'd have thought you'd have had to have called the police to get, you know, a restraining order if somebody said that, oh, I follow you on Twitter. Oh, very good. So for me, I think Twitter's great. I think sometimes I need to take a wee break from it, though, because you do find that it's quite easy to get... I try not to kind of get myself embroiled in things, because I'd end up wanting to throw my phone out the window. Because I think some people use this as, you know, a big means of communication. So I think you have to be careful with it. I think with children, we have to teach them how to use it properly. You know, and obviously that they can use social media platforms for great fun, but it's also about that safety. I mean, I remember some of my kids saying, oh, is this great app, miss? And, you know, it sends out a message to 25 random people and they might speak different languages. Stop right there. Absolutely, yeah. Not. Stuff like that isn't on. But the immediacy of it is great, because for me, studying languages all those years ago, and still studying, let me tell you, but all those years ago, and even like at uni when you went to the language lab, you had to wait for everything to be sent to come through the post, whereas now you can get that immediately, and you can also keep up with the development of language, because, you know, the languages that we learn, they change all the time as well, and we constantly have discussions about terminology. You know, how would you say it? Is it this way, that way? And even the other night I was doing some staff training and we had some native speakers of other languages, and I was saying, oh, how would you say that in your language? And they were saying, oh, just use English word, you know, which was quite interesting. Absolutely.
And just finally, Gillian, what's on the horizon then? What, in terms of projects or international opportunities, or in terms of like your own work as a professional, either, you know, in online spaces or within your day job, what should we be looking out for, and what might be of interest in the coming months and years?
Yeah, I think for languages, obviously, you know, with 1+2, we're heading towards that kind of, you know, 2021 is really approaching us very, very quick. I was privileged enough to be in the group that wrote 1+2. I kind of feel it's my baby, and I've kind of watched it grow up and develop, you know. And I think so that's really coming down the road at us fairly quickly. Interestingly enough, though, next year is the UNESCO Year of Minority Languages, which I think will be great to see what people do with that, because, you know, we need to be celebrating languages, we need to be able to get involved in it. I think, though, to be fair, David, that there's a real fear amongst linguists and amongst people in education with languages because of Brexit, you know, and for me, I think this is a chance for us really to get up and say, right, we need to get stuck in about this, make sure that we are, you know, banging our own kind of tin cans and saying people need to listen, and they need to know how important it is that we get this right, that all of our children get that access to quality language learning, you know, on whatever level that may be. You know, this is not, we're not just talking about, you know, those who are going to go and study at university. It has to be done properly across the place. And you would hope that, you know, people are going to kind of realise this eventually and kind of stop, you know, it's the first thing that goes when it's a sunny day or when there's you know, when there's swimming lessons or something else. In terms of nationally in Scotland, obviously 1+2 is the big thing. I think one of the things that a lot of us are looking for is to see whether there'll be any changes at initial teacher education for primary teachers to make languages one of the kind of core components, but so that it's more, I suppose, uniform across initial teacher education institutions, because just now it's quite patchwork. There's lots of different things that happen, and it'd be good if that was more uniformed, so that then we have teachers who are prepared to come out, you know, to be able to teach languages in the primary school. In terms of kind of secondary education and further and higher education, I think the worry might be is that some of the languages we're beginning to see a kind of drop in numbers, but it's all chicken and egg, because if you don't have them coming through school, you don't always get that demand at university. And as you know yourself, when that happens, you start to see departments closing down or subjects disappearing. So I think we need to maintain that diversity of language, and we have to make sure that we're able to continue with that. I think there's loads and loads of opportunities for teachers. They just need to not be scared, and just, you know, and to quote my mum, get told right in. But they really need to kind of look at that and be brave sometimes, you know, and be able to ask for help and to lean in people to create magical opportunities for children and learners as well. So I think personally, what am I looking forward to? Definitely the mod is coming to where I work next year. I have been very good and not mentioned that. So that's really, really exciting. Wow. Which will be great, and we're really excited about that. We had the chance the other day to share with colleagues from another local authority about our kind of joined up strategy for Gaelic medium education, which was wonderful. So that's exciting. And I think also as well, it's great to see that Latin and classics are coming back as well. I think we forget that that's a language too. So it's nice to be involved in that. So there's a nice resurgence. And I think it's just, you know, it's keep going, but not be frightened to talk about it. I think sometimes we think it's been kind of swept off the table a wee bit because there's other things that are deemed to be more important, and I understand that. But I think you'll find there's a whole load of linguists saying, hiya, we're still here and we're still important and we still matter. So, that's about it. I'm just going to go along buying my own tin can, David, to be honest, going, hiya, French is dead good, so is Spanish, so is Gaelic, so is Italian and German and all of the languages.
Gillian, thank you so much for joining us in EduTalk today. Your enthusiasm really shines through, and it's exciting to follow some of these developments. And of course, you're always welcome, along with your pal and mine, Joe. I've spoken to for ages. Need to get him back on as well.
We should, because he's very good at the Scottish banter. It would be great to do so. He's always good fun, Joe.
Absolutely. So thanks again, Gillian. And how can folk get in touch with you if they've got any comments or questions after listening to today's show?
They can get me on Twitter. I'm at SeniorACT, SeniorACT. You can get me there. That's probably the easiest way to get me on that one. Or you could send a carrier pigeon, smoke signals, anything like that.